Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up on today's program, A Messenger of Peace. We bring you a roundup of the highlights from Pope Francis's engagements during his pastoral visit to the Egyptian capital of Cairo. What Christians in Egypt are saying. A US priest based in Cairo talks about the fear that stalks the Christian community following the Palm Sunday church bombings. A voice of peace and moderation. A leading expert on relations between the Vatican and the Islamic world says the papal visit to Egypt couldn't have come at a better time, given the current tensions and turmoil there. And solidarity with the suffering. A Vatican official talks of the background to this papal visit and about relations between the Catholic Church and the Coptic Orthodox Church. Francis has ended a 27-hour visit to the Egyptian capital Cairo, during which he urged Muslim leaders to unite against fanaticism and against the barbarity of religious extremism, and made an appeal for religious freedom and tolerance. The Pope's visit came in the wake of recent terrorist attacks claimed by so-called Islamic State militants that targeted Coptic churches in Egypt, killing at least 75 people. The papal visit also saw Pope Francis signing a joint declaration with the Coptic Orthodox Pope Tawadros II, in which both parties pledge for the first time that they will recognise each other's sacrament of baptism. The highlight of Pope Francis's final day in Cairo was a mass celebrated on Saturday morning at a military stadium just outside the capital. More than 15,000 people attended the liturgy, including Coptic and Anglican bishops.
L'unico estremismo ammesso per i credenti è quello della carità.
In his homily, Pope Francis said the only fanaticism believers can have is that of charity. Any other fanaticism does not come from God and is not pleasing him. Talking about the nature of true religious faith, he stressed that it is better not to believe than to be a false believer, a hypocrite.
Per Dio è meglio non credere che essere un falso credente, un ipocrita.
Turning back to Friday, the first day of his visit to Cairo, Pope Francis met and signed a joint declaration with the Coptic Orthodox Pope Tawadros II, where Catholics and Copts declared for the first time that they will recognise each other's sacrament of baptism. Philippa Hitchin tells us more about the declaration.
The joint statement was made public following a meeting of the Catholic and Coptic leaders in Cairo on Friday. It comes 44 years after Pope Paul VI first met with the previous Coptic leader, Pope Shenouda III, in May 1973. That encounter marked a milestone in relations following centuries of separation, and it led to the setting up of a commission for theological dialogue with the whole family of Oriental Orthodox churches. In the new common declaration, Francis and Tawadros recall the progress made since then, and call for a deepening of their shared roots in faith through common prayer. In particular, the statement calls for a common translation of the Lord's Prayer and a common date for the celebration of Easter. Catholics and Copts, it says, can witness together to the shared values of human life, the sacredness of marriage and the family, and respect for creation. The declaration calls for intensified prayers for all Christians who are persecuted and killed for their faith, especially in Egypt and the Middle East. Significantly, the statement also resolves an issue which has been a constant source of tension in the dialogue between Copts and Catholics, that of insisting on a second baptism for Christians who convert from one church to the other. Today, the two popes declare, "We will not repeat the baptism that has been administered in either of our churches for any person who wishes to join the other." I'm Philippa Hitchin.
The signing ceremony took place during an ecumenical prayer service held in Cairo's Coptic Church of St. Peter's that was the site of a suicide bombing last December that killed 29 people, most of them women. After the service, Pope Francis and the other Christian leaders laid a wreath of flowers in memory of the victims of that bombing. Earlier on Friday, Pope Francis urged all religious leaders to denounce violations of human rights and to unmask attempts to justify violence and hatred in the name of God. His message came during a speech at the International Peace Conference taking place at Al-Azhar, the Sunni Islam prestigious centre of learning that teaches clerics and scholars from around the world. Philippa Hitchin reports.
After listening to an opening address by the Grand Imam of Al-Azhar, Sheikh Ahmed Al-Tayeb, the Pope spoke of Egypt's inestimable cultural heritage, saying such wisdom and open-mindedness is urgently needed today to ensure peace for present and future generations. Speaking of the covenant which God gave to Moses on Mount Sinai, the Pope said that religion cannot simply be relegated to the private sphere, but at the same time, religion must not be confused with the political sphere or tempted by worldly powers that seek to exploit it.
La violenza, infatti, è la negazione.
Together, he insisted, let us affirm the incompatibility of violence and faith, belief and hatred, upholding instead the sacredness of every human life. Echoing the words of Sheikh Al-Tayeb, Pope Francis also reiterated his appeal for an end to the arms trade, saying that if weapons are produced and sold, sooner or later they will be used.
Solo rendendo trasparenti le torbide manovre.
Only by bringing to light the murky manoeuvrings that feed the cancer of war can its real causes be prevented, he said. Finally, the Pope stressed the importance of working to eliminate poverty and to combat the current rise of populism that does not promote stability and peace. Every unilateral action that doesn't promote constructive and shared solutions, he warned, is a gift to the proponents of radicalism and violence.
C'è bisogno di costruttori di pace, non di provocatori di conflitti.
What our world needs, he said, is peacemakers, not fomenters of conflict, firefighters, not arsonists, preachers of reconciliation, not instigators of destruction. I'm Philippa Hitchin.
Was the background and wider political, religious and social context in which this papal visit to Egypt took place. One person who knows the nation well is Mary Knoll Priest, Father Doug May, an American who has lived and ministered in Egypt for over 25 years. I spoke to Father May just before the papal visit and asked him to describe the current mood there, especially in the wake of the Palm Sunday bombings at two Coptic churches in Egypt that killed 45 people.
Well, partly because of what happened on Palm Sunday with the two Coptic Orthodox churches, there's a wee bit more anxiety than when John Paul II visited in February of 2000. But one of the things that at least was true back then, and I would presume it's somewhat true now, is because the Coptic Rite Catholics and the other six Catholic rites in Egypt are minorities within a minority, because the Coptic Orthodox obviously have a much greater number. And so very often they feel that they're kind of getting it from both sides, both from Muslims as Christians and a wee bit from the Orthodox as a minority group of Christians. But what I've heard in the past is for Coptic Rite Catholics and Catholics in general, the seven different rites that we have here in Egypt, they basically say, this is the first time I'm proud to be both Christian and Catholic at the same time. Because very often they're somewhat defensive about being Christian in a Muslim environment, and they're somewhat defensive about being Catholic among the Orthodox.
Turning to Egypt's Coptic community, how much concern is there about their future, about the situation there, in the wake of that Palm Sunday terrorist attack, which was, of course, was only the latest in quite a long line of terrorist attacks against
right.
their community?
Well, the anxiety increases as these attacks increase. The one thing I would say is that even Christians living in Christian villages, there are few Christian villages here, but they still have them. And for instance, I was visiting one where I'd spent time in the past and had friends, and there were about somewhere around 40,000 people. And maybe at least 95, if not 99% are actually Christian of six different affiliations. And it was the first time I spent time with them, and some of them are fairly successful from having worked in the Gulf states and have a fair amount of money, but it's the first time even the successful ones who have fairly nice houses and a decent lifestyle have said, if I could leave, I would leave. Because I'm tired of feeling vulnerable in a country that I should call my own. Because I'm being tolerated at best, but I'm not being accepted as an equal citizen. And what we're afraid of is, you know, you're walking the streets, you're in the church, somebody may shoot you, somebody may put a bomb in the church. The other thing is, in these villages, they could actually have their water cut off, their electricity cut off, or even the villages sealed off. So whether that's a reality or not, we're all anxious about that as a possibility.
Okay, turning now to the wider picture of the Muslim community at large, what are relations like between Christians, whatever their affiliation, and Muslims in Egypt at grassroots level?
Right, and I've actually just got back from where I had a lot of grassroots, but here's where it kind of hits the road. If the Christian leaders, meaning the Orthodox Catholic or priests or the Protestant ministers, have formed a good relationship with the Muslim leaders, the people of their various congregations more or less follow the lead of the different leaders, whether they be Muslim or Christian. So they kind of set the tone. So if there's an open-minded, very religious, spiritual Muslim leader who feels very confident about approaching Christians and vice versa in terms of Christian leaders, the people more or less also coexist in a very good way. One of my former seminarians, for instance, who has been a priest for over 20 years, I just visited him last Friday. He does prison ministry, and he's been involved in it, got his congregation, and because the Muslims felt that they weren't getting the same kind of services, he actually found a Muslim sheikh, Abdul Rahman, and he's got a new one now, Mahmoud Goma, who actually helped him in his prison ministry as Muslims visiting the Muslims, and their congregations are involved. And because they're actually living their faith, both the Catholic side, Catholic Christian, as well as the Muslim, they have become friends with each other because they feel this is how you live your faith. Instead of arguing over dogmas and who's what, you just live your faith as you feel you've been called to live it. So, you know, at the grassroots level, it can be very nice relations. And in other places, it's nobody speaks to anybody and everybody's afraid of everybody.
What do you expect to be the main benefits from Pope Francis's visit to Cairo?
I would say the main thing is going to be just a sense of solidarity for the Christian community. And then the other thing is he'll be visiting Sheikh Al-Azhar, Sheikh Taib, and that's following a visit of Sheikh Taib to Rome last year. And possibly if there could be something said with Sheikh Al-Azhar, Sheikh Taib, that would go a long way to at least kind of put the kibosh on some of the extremism. Most extremists won't listen to any of their leaders because technically extremism for me is not a religion. It's an ideology that hides with religion.
I was speaking there to American Catholic priest Father Doug May, based in Cairo. Among those who had invited Pope Francis to Egypt was the Grand Imam of Al-Azhar, the university and mosque in Cairo that is widely seen as the leading centre of learning of Sunni Islam. So what is the current state of the Vatican's dialogue with the Al-Azhar? And how strong a voice and influence does the institution have in the wider Muslim community across the world? To find out more, Philippa Hitchens spoke to Gabriel Saeed Reynolds, Professor of Islamic Studies and Theology at the University of Notre Dame and one of the world's leading experts on relations between Christians and Muslims. He was part of the Vatican's delegation that attended the recent round of talks in Cairo between the Vatican and Al-Azhar clerics. Let's listen to her interview.
I'm going to ask you first of all then, you attended the recent round of talks, didn't you, between the Vatican and Al-Azhar in Cairo, which came after these years of tension and mistrust, I think it's fair to say, between the two sides. What kind of reception did you receive there at that meeting?
The Al-Tahrir delegation was remarkably eager to restart the conversations with the Vatican delegation. You're right that there had been a history of complications regarding this dialogue, which dates back to the bombing on December 31st, 2010 in Alexandria. And there was also some questions about exactly the relationship between Al-Azhar and the Vatican during the period of Pope Benedict's papacy. Since the election of Pope Francis, I think there's been a rewarming of relationships between a number of different Islamic institutions and the Vatican. And this was one sign of that warming, and there was a real eagerness to welcome the Vatican delegation.
The meeting there focused, didn't it, on fundamentalism and religious violence, beyond obviously agreeing that we must work together to combat it. What kind of practical progress do you think that meeting achieved?
At the heart of the meeting was an exhibition of the efforts by Al-Azhar currently to combat the propaganda of extremist groups, notably ISIS or Daesh, in the Islamic world. So this was a real opportunity for people on the Al-Azhar side to make the point that, listen, the West often makes the claim that why won't Muslims stand up to extremism and to violent groups in the heart of the Islamic world? And Al-Azhar was making the point that we're doing just that. They really emphasized the work of an institution in the heart of Al-Azhar known as Al-Azhar Observer, which is active in social media in combating the propaganda of ISIS in particular, but other extremist groups as well. And there was also a sense that there was work that could be done on both sides and work that could be done together. So there was a concern for encouraging the Vatican to continue its efforts to reach out to people in the West about welcoming Muslim migrants in Europe and elsewhere. And so that was one issue. But on the other side as well, there was encouragement from the Vatican that Al-Azhar would continue to speak out about the importance of the rights of Christian minorities in the Islamic world.
How much authority, in your view, does Al-Azhar have within the Muslim world to do just this? I mean, it is a revered seat of learning, but how much can it speak for the wider Muslim world?
Right, that's an excellent question. And the answer is not immediately obvious, because unlike with the Catholic Church, where we have a clear central authority and a teaching body that the faithful can all look to, in the Islamic world, there's no organized central body. So Al-Azhar relies on the politics and the power of persuasion. And in many ways, their ability to persuade is linked to their prestige within the Sunni Islamic world. Historically, it's been one of the most prestigious institutions, in part because of its age. Al-Azhar was founded, at least the university, and under a certain form already in the 10th or 11th century, depending on how you calculate things exactly. On the other hand, in recent years, there have been some parties of the Islamic world who consider Al-Azhar to be one voice among many in the Islamic world. There's some concern about the relationship between Al-Azhar and the Egyptian government. There's also a rise of more conservative Salafi Islam, which looks to other sources of authority and sees Al-Azhar as not rigorous enough in their approach to the Islamic law.
So in this context, then, what impact do you think Pope Francis's visit can have in terms of perhaps supporting this voice that Al-Azhar has?
I think it's enormously important to have a pope who's willing to not only speak about the importance of interreligious dialogue, but in fact to go to the heart of the Islamic world, to be in Cairo meeting with Al-Azhar. My sense is that the impact will take place principally by the way in which Al-Azhar can help amplify the pope's voice and his message about interreligious dialogue, his message about authentic religion supporting the path of peace. When those messages come only from the pope speaking from Rome or elsewhere in Europe, they can reach a certain audience. But when they come from Cairo alongside Sheikh Ahmed al-Tayyib, the grand imam of Al-Azhar, then a lot more people will listen. It will help, on the one hand, encourage Muslims to seek positive relations with their Christian neighbors in wherever country they may be found, and will also encourage Muslims to continue on the path that most are already taking, which is to look to the heart of the religious sources in Islam for a voice of moderation.
How would you describe the local relations there in Cairo and in Egypt itself in terms of Muslim-Christian communities?
At the moment, things are extremely tense in Cairo, of course, after the twin bombing on Palm Sunday, which is not an isolated incident. This is the latest in a series of attacks on Christians. And I think the Christian community in Egypt can rightly feel that they're innocent victims of all of this. There haven't been Christian attacks on Islamic institutions. They haven't provoked these attacks in any ways. Sometimes the sorts of accusations that have been made amongst the Christian community have to do with rumors that, for example, a Christian man has had relations with a Muslim woman, or rumors that a church is being rebuilt without official permission from the religious authorities in Egypt. So the sorts of things which should be taken for granted as a normal element of a religious community's rights to conduct its own affairs lead to polemics against the Christian community, and then, of course, sporadically, these terrible acts of violence. So there's great frustration and concern on the Christian side. The Christian community welcomed the election of Sisi initially. They were among his greatest supporters. There's now enormous anxiety that he hasn't been able to protect the Christian community, of course. On the other side, there's also tension in the heart of the Islamic community in Egypt because of the historical competition between more conservative brands of Islam, including Salafis, including the Muslim Brotherhood, and those who have aligned themselves more closely with the Sisi government. So there's internal tension there as well. So in some ways, the timing of the Pope's visit couldn't come at a better time because of the turmoil right now. A voice of peace and moderation is sorely needed.
That was Professor Gabriel Saeed Reynolds of Notre Dame University in the US, interviewed by Philippa Hitchin. Pope Francis's meeting with the Coptic Orthodox leader Pope Tawadros in Cairo was described as an important sign of solidarity with Christians who suffer and die for their faith in Egypt and throughout the Middle East. That was the view of Monsignor Gabriel Quique, who heads the Office for Dialogue with the Oriental Orthodox Churches at the Vatican's Council for Christian Unity. Earlier this month, he accompanied the Council's President, Cardinal Kirk Koch, and Pope Francis's private secretary to Egypt with a personal message of condolences in the wake of the Palm Sunday bomb attacks on Coptic churches in Alexandria and Tantra, north of Cairo, that were claimed by so-called Islamic State militants. Monsignor Quique says the Coptic Pope was deeply touched by that sign of spiritual attention and closeness to the suffering Christian communities. The Vatican official was interviewed by Philippa Hitchin just before the start of Pope Francis's visit to Cairo.
You accompanied Cardinal Koch a week ago in the wake of those terror attacks on Palm Sunday. Tell us, first of all, the message that you took with you and who you met with.
Yes, as it was in the past, when the 21 Coptic Christians were beheaded at the Libyan coast, the Coptic bishop from Italy, His Excellency Monsieur Barnaba, asked me if the Holy Father would give a message encouraging the Coptic Church and also a message of solidarity. So now something similar happened. The Holy Father asked His Eminence Cardinal Koch, his private secretary, and since I'm responsible for the dialogue with the Oriental Orthodox Churches, I had the opportunity to accompany Cardinal Koch to Egypt. Everything had to be prepared very abruptly with these terrible attacks on Sunday, Palm Sunday. So we left Monday evening, and really it was only a visit to Pope Tawadros because we arrived 9:30 at the airport of Cairo. We stayed the night in the Apostolic Nunciature, and then the early morning we traveled to the residence of the Coptic Pope close to Alexandria.
He had been inside the church at the time of the bombing, hadn't he?
Yes, and we had understood that the attack was against him, but it was a tragedy for all those who passed away, but the life of the Pope was not in danger.
What was the message that you took from Pope
Francis? Firstly, the Pope asked the Cardinal to convey his condolences for the attacks and all those who died, to express his condolences and his solidarity and his closeness, his spiritual closeness in prayer, in heart and mind. and that he is taking all the sadness in his heart and his prayer, and that also that he wanted to express his closeness, to be ready to help the Coptic Church there where it is possible. Directly we were received by Pope Tavatos. Afterwards, we had to run to the airport. So he asked us, because he was very, really, he was touched emotionally, heartfully touched by that sign of spiritual attention. Then the Pope answered to give a sign of gratitude to Pope Francis and also to express his closeness as well, because when they were here together in Rome, they promised one another to pray for one another every day.
Pope Francis talks a lot about the martyrs, these Coptic Christians who have been murdered so brutally, and the possibility of seeing in them an important sign for the ecumenical dialogue between the churches.
Yes, we referred to the visits that Pope Tavatos did to Rome, and I remember very well after the speech, the address of Pope Tavatos, Pope Francis answered. And so Pope Tavatos spoke now in Arabic, and I could recognize the Arabic expression, Al-Maskoniya Bidam, so ecumenism of blood. And he repeated again that he will never forget the first time he heard that expression. Also later, Pope Francis repeated at the occasion of the beheading of the 21 Coptic Christians at the Libyan coast, referring to the persecution, he said, when they are persecuted, they are not persecuted because they are Orthodox, because they are Copts, or because they are Anglicans. No, they are persecuted because they are Christians. And then he refers to the expression of Tertullian in the past. As the blood of the martyrs became the seed for the Christians, the growing of the church, at the same time, the blood of the martyrs become the seed nowadays for unity of Christians.
There are those who would like these martyrs to be recognized more broadly as martyrs for the whole of Christianity, martyrs for the Catholic Church as well.
Yes, yes. Well, in fact, they are, let us say, recognized through our prayers, because, as I told you, the two popes pray for one another every day. And there is also that expression, your suffering is our suffering, your joy is our joy, your house is our house. And through that experience of togetherness, we hope that we can deepen that spirit of togetherness also through recognizing our common martyrs. In fact, I think we believe that through that way of going together, walking together, caminare insieme, as the Pope is repeating it many times, let us walk together, let us pray together, let us collaborate together. So I believe that the Holy Father, since he promised to pray for those who died, also for the families, that it is in fact a recognition, a spiritual recognition, of this closeness, that we are deeply united with one another.
And that was Monsignor Gabriel Quiquet, an expert on dialogue with the Oriental Orthodox Churches at the Pontifical Council for Christian Unity, interviewed by Philippa Hitchin. That's all we have time for today. Thanks so much for joining us here on Vatican Radio. I'm Susie Hodges, and until next time, Laudato Jesus Christus.